My name is Carrie Ginger and your host of the Biteable podcast, Know Better, Live Best. Today's guest is Lisa Steele, a fifth generation chicken keeper, Maine master gardener, and lifelong thrifty New Englander. She's the founder of Fresh Eggs Daily, the popular natural chicken keeping site, which has been named one of the top 10 garden blogs by Better Homes and Gardens magazine. Listen as we discuss how chickens and ducks can be utilized to improve your garden, the importance of eating pasture-raised eggs and poultry, and Lisa's hopes for the future of agriculture. Know Better, Live Best is dedicated to supporting food and health literacy in people of all ages. Our mission is to cut through the misinformation surrounding food, health, and nutrition, because we believe that when people know better, they can make the right choices and live their best lives. We are presented by Biteable Foods. They use blockchain and Internet of Things technology to build traceable, transparent food systems, because it shouldn't take an investigative journalist to find out where food comes from. Hi, I am here with Lisa Steele with Fresh Eggs Daily. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's early on a Saturday morning, so I'm still caffeinating. So just ignore the coffee sips in between questions.
I did that right before this, so I understand how you're feeling.
Just down it.
Absolutely. That's what I did. So why don't you give us a little background on yourself?
Sure. I am the founder of Fresh Eggs Daily, which is a brand, you could call it, on social media and my blog. And I encourage people to raise chickens and grow gardens and just kind of do things more naturally and be more self-sustainable. And, you know, there's just so much enjoyment in it and fulfillment. And I think it's really important for your health and your family's health. But my roots are my grandparents had a chicken farm in Massachusetts, and I grew up across the street from it. They raised chickens for meat and eggs, and they sold them in a diner that they owned. So growing up, we had chickens, and I did the whole 4-H thing. And I'm pretty sure we ate my grandparents' chickens, but I don't really have recollection of that. I currently don't eat my own chickens, but I certainly don't have a problem eating chickens I didn't know, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely. So you have quite the extensive background, even in addition to that. So you've been on television, you're an author, gardener, and farmer, and you're an expert on raising chickens and ducks. So give us a little bit of background. Like, what led you, I know you talked about raising the, you know, growing up with chickens, so I'm sure that's kind of how you had your interest, but what about the ducks?
Being a kid with chickens and being an adult with chickens, I went to college. I'm from a really small town in Massachusetts and knew there was a big world out there and I wanted to be part of it. So I went to college and I got a degree in accounting and I worked on Wall Street for a while. Long story short, my husband was in the Navy, and bouncing around, it's really hard to have a career. So we lived on a little farm in Virginia on his last tour of duty, and I decided that I wanted goats. It was 2009. Everybody was doing goats. They were, you know, the baby goats and the goat yoga and goat milk soap and everything. And I wanted to do goats. And he didn't think that would be quite as fun as I did. So he counteroffered with chickens, which I accepted. So we went to the feed store and I felt pretty comfortable. I had chickens as a kid and I had grown up around them. So I felt very comfortable trying to raise chickens. And I had a plan. I was going to read a bunch of books and magazine articles, whatever. So we got to the feed store and we're picking out our chickens. And it's like being in a candy store or a bakery. You know, you're like, I'll have two of those and two of those because they're all just different colors and whatever. So my husband pointed to a bin and said, and we'll take two of those too. And they were ducklings. So we actually started raising ducklings at the same time as the chicks. And they're different. And I ended up doing a lot of reading and research and ended up ultimately writing a book about them because there isn't really a lot of information about ducks. Chickens are definitely the number one. And ducks are kind of like the, you know, the stepchild that no one really talks about or knows about. But we absolutely love our ducks.
That's so interesting that it was just by chance. You're going to pick out chickens and you came home with two ducklings. Oh, that's, mm-hmm. And it's something new for you to learn too. So I'm sure it was an exciting venture for both of you.
Exactly.
So you garden and obviously raising chickens. How are chickens useful in the garden?
Actually, in my book, Gardening with Chickens, I realized that there was a huge missed opportunity. There were a lot of people who either were gardeners and started raising chickens or raised chickens, but also planted gardens. And they would just either fence in their garden or pen up their chickens and keep them separate because chickens are super destructive. So if you just let them free in your garden, they're just going to eat everything. They're going to dig up all your plants. And so the easy way is to keep them separate, but by integrating them, it just makes so much more sense. Chickens provide really great manure for the garden. They're in the off season. I love to let them in to scratch through the soil. They'll get a lot of the bugs. Like this time of year, once you've harvested everything, they'll go through and they'll eat a lot of the bugs that were planning on overwintering in your garden. And same in spring, if you let them in before you plant, they'll kind of clean up, they'll loosen the soil for you. And I've noticed fewer bugs in the garden since letting the chickens have limited supervised access. They still don't get to run free in the garden.
So you let them in your garden even when maybe whatever you're growing is growing at that time? So it's just more supervised at that point?
Limited. I try to keep them out during the growing season, but once your plants are, you know, 2 feet tall or higher, they're not going to do too much damage. What I tend to do more though is like when I thin my seedlings or when I start pulling things out because they're past or gone by, I'll give the chickens all the corn stalks and the squash vines and all that kind of stuff. And they really like to go through that and they'll eat the leaves and whatever's left.
Some really healthy chickens. So tell us about what's in your garden.
We actually had our first frost, or I guess not really a hard frost, but there was frost on the grass the other morning. So really all I have left in the garden is some pumpkins, some corn, and I think there are a few radishes I missed that I'll have to pull out. And we have some watermelon going, which I've been covering. We live in Maine, so it's zone 5, not a super long growing season. But when we were in Virginia, I grew cantaloupe and watermelon and sweet potatoes, and I really love growing all that stuff. So I am determined to grow watermelon in Maine. And they're like about this big right now. So most likely the chickens will just end up eating them, but they're still going strong.
That's amazing, but I'm a little sad to hear about that first frost, but I'm not a winter person, so I want to hold on to that warm weather as long as I can. And it reminds you of all that regrowth too, like the warm weather and everything you can plant and grow. And you're taking care of your garden in between the growing season. Like you said, probably the most work the chickens do, from I think what I'm hearing from you, is in that off season where they're really helping that soil health.
Plus, when I clean out my coop in the fall, I just rake all the straw and feathers and chicken manure right over the garden, let it sit till spring. I mean, it's amazing fertilizer for the garden. It's free. The straw helps. I plant garlic about soon. Soon I should be planting my garlic, and I'll mulch that with the straw so it loves it. So that's another way in the winter that the chickens are super helpful, not directly, but indirectly.
Right. And that's all. Everything is so natural about what you're doing in mm-hmm. your garden. And you just feel good about probably everything you're growing, like just the health of it. So you said this earlier, most people don't know about ducks or raising ducks, that they're kind of, you know, they take that second seat to chickens. But you, like you said, you wrote the book, Duck Eggs Daily, Raising Happy, Healthy Ducks Naturally. How is raising ducks different than chickens?
Our ducks and chickens do live together. They share a coop and a run, mostly because I like the body heat in the winter. It gets really cold here, so the more you can pack into a coop, the better. I did have them separate in Virginia, and I think they liked living separately, but I mean, they eat the same feed. They will eat sort of different treats. Ducks are more into healthy eating. They love peas and beans and spinach and kale and leafy greens and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the chickens, if you let them, would live on pancakes and spaghetti and whatever unhealthy kitchen scraps you give them. But they coexist, you know, so I'll throw in, I keep all our kitchen scraps. Nothing goes to waste, and I just throw it out to them and they kind of pick and choose what they want to eat. So they do kind of complement each other really well. The ducks sleep on the floor in the straw and the chickens roost. So that also works out. You can almost get double space in your coop because it becomes like a double decker. You don't need additional coop space for the ducks. So it works out really well.
Was it a hard transition for you for putting ducks and chickens together? Like you said, they coexist fairly well together.
Yeah, they were fine. They had already been sharing a run and they free range together. I do a little bit of supervised free range, try to almost every day, and everybody gets along fine.
Awesome. So what are the different benefits to raising chickens and ducks?
So secret, I actually love raising ducks better. They're a lot healthier than chickens. I don't know if you've been following the news, but there's the avian influenza. There's the Newcastle that's really wiping out flocks in California. Yeah, even influenza is spread by migrating wild birds. Ducks can be carriers, but they can't actually get it. So I just find them a lot healthier. They don't have a lot of the problems that chickens do. They don't tend to get egg bound. They don't tend to go broody. If I don't know if you raise chickens, but if you have a broody chicken and are not interested in raising chicks, that chicken is just going to make you pull your hair out because all they want to do is sit on the nest on eggs all day. And then no one else can get in the nest and they fight with everybody. It's horrible. But ducks don't do that. Ducks are far more easygoing. I find them much lower maintenance. They lay really well through the winter, which chickens don't do. And they're super cold hardy because they don't have combs or wattles to get frostbite in the winter. They just kind of tuck their head under their wing, pull their feet up into all that fat on their belly. They'll sit out in the snow all day. So that's like the secret that I really prefer ducks a lot better.
Well, judging by what you said, I'm not surprised. I mean, they do, like you said, right? Lower maintenance. That's easier for everyone because they're all so busy. And it's fun to hear the different personalities of chickens and ducks. I would have never thought to even, you know, give them human traits almost.
I know, my bad.
No, I love it. So we've talked a little bit about soil health, and that is a theme that reoccurs on the Biteable podcast. Can you go, is there any more information you want to give about the soil health and how chickens and ducks help to improve that?
Sure. I know there's a no-till movement where over-tilling really does ruin your soil structure, and it's kind of easy. I mean, I admit, we do till our garden because I'm not great at weeding or keeping the weeds out in the winter. So in the spring, my husband just goes through the tractor and tills everything. But chickens are really gentle on the soil. They're only going to scratch down an inch or two, and they just really loosen that top layer of the soil. They're also great at pulling out the weeds and the bugs I mentioned, as well as when they're doing this, they're pooping. So you're sort of fertilizing your soil as they go along. It's just a much easier way to get your garden prepared for the growing season, I guess, is what I would say.
Well, they're helping you do the work to get ready for planting.
Right.
Small employees.
Free labor. And their feathers provide lots of nutrients to the garden. Is it nitrogen that's in the feathers? It's not. Nitrogen is in the manure. Their feathers, anyway. Their feathers break down slowly over the winter. So even in chicken feathers, there is chicken feather meal that is sold commercially that is ground chicken feathers. And people can buy that for their gardens. So you've got this supply for free, basically, to use.
That is fascinating. I never even thought to think of the feathers, but I haven't even heard about the feathers being helpful in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. So you probably know a lot about eggs. Can you go into a little bit of detail about maybe the labels we might find when we go shopping for our eggs? It's confusing.
I can. It is confusing. And I mean, so one benefit of your own chickens is colored eggs, which you're not going to see in the grocery store, which are beautiful. But everybody doesn't have access to that. And I was even talking to my mom, and she was, she lives in Massachusetts, so she can't have any of my eggs. But she was buying eggs that it said hormone-free and cage-free on the label, on the egg carton. And she thought that she was doing right and buying the best eggs. So I actually kind of had to educate her because it's interesting when you do go to the grocery store and you have that whole rack of eggs and you have no idea what you're looking for. So I actually made a list because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss any. But terms that are completely meaningless on your egg carton are all natural and farm fresh. They mean nothing. Eggs are natural by nature, and farm fresh is just a marketing ploy. So just disregard those. Hormone-free and antibiotic-free are also things you really shouldn't worry about. It's illegal in the United States to give hormones to laying chickens. So there are no eggs that have hormones in them on the shelf. Same with antibiotic. A lot of the commercial farmers will give antibiotics to their meat hens, but it's not really general practice to give antibiotics to your laying hens. So that's also not something you should be concerned about. Vegetarian fed. That's another one. People love that. They love to see, you know, eggs from vegetarian fed chickens. Chickens are not vegetarians. Chickens will eat, you know, bugs and worms and snakes and toads and lizards. Mine caught a cardinal once and they ate the cardinal. They're meat eaters. They're omnivores. So chickens really should not be fed a completely vegetarian diet. And another little secret is if you see vegetarian on the carton, that probably means that chicken has never seen the outdoors, because if they've been outdoors for even a day, they could have eaten a bug or a worm, and then they can't be labeled vegetarian. So all those terms you just completely disregard. If you see cage-free, that's a little better. I think most of us know that commercial chickens are in cages that are like the size of a piece of copy paper. And that's really sad to all of us because a chicken, you know, no one wants to live in a cage that small. All cage-free really means is that the cages have been opened and the chickens are all milling around in a huge warehouse. So, you know, they're pooping and they're laying eggs, and if one dies, the others are probably eating it. And there's actually a higher mortality rate among cage-free chickens than caged. That is actually not a good thing. It seems like it would be a good thing, but they're actually safer in their own individual cages, sadly enough. Let me see. Okay, so another one, certified humane. That, if they're certified humane, they can't live in cages and they have to be allowed space to basically be chickens, but it doesn't mean that they're still going outside. You know, they're not roaming around in this gorgeous pasture, and they also can still trim their beaks. Once they let the chickens out of the cages, the chickens started being chickens and basically, you know, bullying each other. So they had to start trimming their beaks. So it's still considered humane to trim beaks, which to me, I don't know. I mean, that kind of makes me sad too. So those things are not great. Free ranging also is another one. They only have to have access to the outdoors. That means the chickens can be in a huge warehouse with a little teeny door. And I've read studies where like a huge percentage of chickens never even find that door in their whole lifetime. So technically they have access to the outdoors. Most of them never make it. Organic, obviously, if you're super interested in organic, that means the chickens have been fed organic feed. If that's important to you, the one thing that organic does not mean is that that chicken was really treated humanely, or it's still not a happy chicken running around in a pasture. It's just relating to what they're being fed. So really what you want to look for is pasture raised. If that carton says pasture raised, that means those chickens have been outside every day for a minimum, I think, of 6 hours a day. And those are happy chickens. They're out in grass. They're eating what they want. They're locked up at night to be safe. And it says, so for pasture free, they have to have 108 square feet per chicken. So like compare that to your 8.5 by 11 piece of copy paper. So pasture raised is what you want to look for. And look for, in our grocery store, we have a lot of eggs from local farms, and a lot of times it'll have the name of the farm on there. So if you're worried about like carbon footprints and freshness and all that, look to see if there's a local farm that's supplying your local grocery store. That's all I got.
Oh, that's great advice, because I've been guilty. I've since learned a lot more, but you see all natural and I think, oh, wonderful, I'm doing something good and buy it. So I've been that consumer many a times, but there are so many labels out there and it's confusing. But it really comes down to pasture raised eggs, and that's
pasture raised. You know. Those are the key words that you want to see.
So you were showing me the different colors of eggs, and they're gorgeous. The different colors, does that mean they're just from different like breeds of chickens, or do they have any nutritional differences?
Nope, all the same inside. They all look the same. They taste the same. Just different breeds of chickens have been bred to lay different color eggs.
Oh, but they're just beautiful. I wish we saw those in our stores, because they do. They look great. So what are some, so you eat these eggs. What are some of the benefits to maybe eating the eggs that you're growing versus the all natural eggs in the grocery store?
Well, the first benefit obviously is the freshness. You are not going to be going out to your backyard collecting an egg that has just been laid. A lot of times they're still warm when I collect them, coming inside and cooking it. You know, it's like your garden produce. Fresh produce is just so much better tasting than anything in the store. I don't remember exactly how long a commercial farmer has to get from the time the egg is laid, washed, collected, cartoned, sent to the store, put on the shelf, but it's obviously not going to be hours, you know, so you're never going to get an egg that's quite as fresh. And there are a lot of studies being done or have been done about the nutritional value of eggs laid by chickens who do basically eat grass and other things instead of a purely commercial, usually corn-based diet. There's less cholesterol. There's more of all kinds of different vitamins. So there is more nutrition in an egg laid by a chicken with a varied diet.
Well, and it's interesting. It's not just the outside of the egg that's colorful. The yolk is more vibrant as well, I believe.
You can tell the difference. On Hallmark, since you just mentioned that you watched the Hallmark Home and Family segment, they had actually gotten some fresh eggs and some store-bought eggs. And I asked the host which was the egg from the, you know, happy local farm chicken. And he could easily point it out. The yolks are so much more orange. The whites are thicker. So if you're going to be frying eggs or poaching eggs, fresh eggs are going to hold together so much better, because as the egg ages, the white starts to get really watery. So if you're cracking your egg into your pan and it spreads all over the place, that egg's not all that fresh.
I think we know that all too well. I'm envisioning most of my eggs. So no, I need to really figure out maybe a nice farm around here that has chickens where I can get the farm fresh eggs as well, because it'd be fun to see, even for my children to see the difference too. So I'm going to switch gear slightly to pasture poultry versus conventional poultry. What is the difference between that? What do you know about this?
I have to admit, I can't watch those videos of the chickens in the huge poultry houses, because it's just so sad. I mean, it's just cage upon cage, row upon row, one chicken in each cage. And basically, they lay an egg almost every day, which chickens do. That egg rolls away into like a conveyor belt kind of thing. They're fed, and that's about it. But one of the things about chickens is they don't lay eggs once the days get shorter. They need about 16 hours of daylight to lay an egg. So my chickens, this time of year, are slowing down. I let them take a break, and they're going to start up again in the spring. Some even backyard chicken keepers will light their coop in the winter to force the chickens to keep laying those eggs, which is what the commercial farms do. So those chickens basically are in light, I would assume, pretty much 24/7. They force them to lay an egg every day, year round. And after about 2 years, if you ever see pictures of chickens that have been rescued, a lot of, especially in the UK, they do a lot of rescue of what they call battery farm hens. These chickens look like they've literally been through the ringer, like put in your dryer and just put on high. And I mean, they're missing feathers and they're so thin and they look awful compared to my chickens at 7 or 8 years old are still nice and fat and shiny, and they don't lay eggs quite as often, but they're so much healthier for it. I mean, those chickens are not getting any exercise in the commercial farms. I mean, it's not just chickens either. It's really any animal that's raised conventionally. It's too expensive. You know, a farm could probably not function giving chickens the space they need and selling eggs for 89 cents a dozen. You just can't do the math. It's never going to work out.
No, it's not. But it doesn't make it any easier to, you know, hear those stories or to see it. And I think some people it's easier. I know it is for me sometimes, just to kind of turn it off and not, you know, think about it, which I'm sure a lot of people do, or maybe they just don't know about what can happen.
Well, and that's a thing. I don't really address that, or that hasn't become my platform. I've kind of come at it at a different way and figure that every person that I can convince to raise their own chickens, that's one less person buying from the commercial farms. So I feel like I'm taking business away from that horrible living experience for chickens by every person I've convinced to raise their own chickens, you know, just kind of chipping away at the commercial chicken farming business. Or like you said, you don't have chickens, but find a local farmer or find a farmer's market. We drive around here in Maine and there's houses that just have fresh egg signs. You know, stop, knock on the door, ask if they'll sell you eggs. There's a lot of options.
Good advice. It's something that just needs to be brought up to maybe think about, because usually we just need more information or ways to make it easier, because life gets busy. And so you wonder, well, how can I do that with my busy schedule? And there are ways. You just need to be a little more informed about that. Also, you were talking about how you convince people to raise chickens. Is that a really big learning curve, or is it not so hard?
It's not really hard. You know, it's kind of the basics. They just need shelter, food, water. I think the biggest learning curve is the whole predator issue, because pretty much everything wants to eat chickens. So people live in a suburban neighborhood in a fenced-in yard, and they get a little chicken coop, maybe the size of a doghouse. They put 5 chickens in it. They let their chickens out in the morning, feed them, go to work. They come home, and a fox has eaten all their chickens. You know, they don't realize just how tenacious predators are. So you really have to be careful. Mine are in a huge pen all day, except for when I'm outside, when I can stay with them, supervise them. That, I think, is the biggest learning curve, is just their protection.
That's actually what I was thinking about when I was envisioning my yard and all of the wildlife. That does happen in my backyard. I was wondering, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, that would be something I'd really have to be well thought out and make sure, like you said, supervised while the chickens are out.
Right.
Sourcing of food, we bring this up a lot in the Biteable podcast. Why is sourcing food important to you, if it is? Obviously, with eggs, it is important to you.
Well, fortunately, I live in Maine, and Maine has a huge farming community. Even our local grocery store has signs, like it'll have a sign on the cucumbers, and it'll mention the farm where the cucumbers came from, or the corn, or, I mean, there's so much that we grow in Maine, you know, potatoes and corn and blueberries and those kind of things. And not only local sourcing, but seasonal eating is really, really important. You know, even our eggs, we get tons of eggs in the spring and summer, so we eat them more. We'll have steak and eggs for dinner, or I'll make a quiche for dinner. So even eggs we treat as a seasonal crop, and you just eat more when they're in season, and you eat less, like we eat oatmeal in the winter, you know, and we do that with tomatoes. I won't buy a store-bought tomato. If I can't get it from my garden or a farmer's market, I'm not going to eat it. So I think just being more conscious of seasonal cooking and seasonal eating, and then sourcing locally. And if you see, you know, a little stand in front of one of your neighbor's houses and they're selling their squash and whatever, stop and buy some. It's probably going to be cheaper, and it's definitely going to be fresher than what you get at the store.
That has also been a reoccurring theme that has been brought up, especially for people that garden or they're in the cooking world. So I think that's something for our listeners to pay attention to, and myself to try to cook more seasonally and buy the produce that's in season, because I'm sure it'll be more tasty as well.
It is. And it's sort of like you don't really feel like eating potato soup or baked potatoes or all that in the summer. And, you know, your potatoes and all your root vegetables, that's what you're eating in the winter, your squashes and your beets and potatoes. And those are heavier. You want to be eating your leafy greens and your beans and peas and things in the summer. So it really does make sense. And you'll definitely be eating fresher food.
Absolutely. What do you see as the biggest challenges facing farmers today?
The fact that people, and it's not just farmers, but people want top quality, whatever it is, but they don't want to pay for it. So someone would rather pay 89 cents for a dozen old eggs from sad chickens than $4 a dozen from their local farmer, where they know the chickens are happy and have been treated well and the eggs are fresh. And I think that just more value being put on local and humanely raised and grown things is just so important. You know, you can't go into the store and just look for a bargain. You know, you'll end up with a cart full of, you know, just bulk garbage that you really shouldn't be eating. You know, I think, so that's one, is the price. People, you know, we went to buy an organic turkey once at a local Amish farm when we were in Virginia. And instead of, you know, the 39 cents a pound that you pay at the grocery store around Thanksgiving, you know, it was like $7 a pound or some ridiculous amount of money. I mean, the turkey was like $70, and it seems ridiculous, but it's once a year. It was Thanksgiving, and you're helping a local farmer, and they can't raise that turkey on 39 cents a pound. You know, they just can't make ends meet to raise animals well and healthily and have the space for them and all that. So I think just realizing that you're going to pay a little bit more, but you're going to be getting back. You know, if you can't spend that extra money on your family's health, then what are you spending your money on? And if you can't spend that money, then start growing stuff yourself. You can do cow shares or pig shares in a lot of areas where you basically pay for a part and then you get packaged meat at the end of the season.
So I think what I'm hearing here, one way to help these farmers is to be more informed and understand what you're actually paying for. It's not just maybe your budget for the week that you're trying to keep in check. I mean, that's important. However, maybe budget for spending right. A little more on your produce or your eggs if you know where it's come from and you're supporting those farmers.
Right. I am also big into eating real food. Like, I've never been a fan of artificial sweeteners or low fat this or gluten free that. And I understand if you have a real health issue, that's one thing. But I think that getting back to eating real food and not something that substitutes as real food is really important. I don't know about you, but these things that are like these, you know, meat substitutes, if you read the label, there's a lot of stuff in there that I'm really not sure we're supposed to be eating. You know, I actually got a package of Beyond Burgers by accident and decided to cook them up because I've never had one. And so that fake hamburger patty thing, it smelled like cat food. It didn't look anything like meat or smell like meat. I ended up giving it to the chickens and they were even a little hesitant about what was in it. So just get the best quality, freshest, most local food that you can and eat a wide variety in moderation and you're going to be just fine.
Right. The shorter the label, the better. And you do. You feel so much healthier. You have more energy and you just don't quite, you know, you have that lethargic feeling sometimes when you know you're not eating well. I know I've been there.
And
it feels
good. Right. And if you have, I mean, And people give up, I mean, people are vegan or vegetarian and they give up meat. I mean, maybe because it's the animals and they don't want to eat animal products, whatever. And that's fine, but don't make a fake burger out of chemicals and call it meat. Like, get your protein elsewhere in beans, or there's other protein sources that you can eat that still are all natural.
You've had great advice on buying eggs, and even we were talking about pasture poultry versus the conventional poultry. Are there any other big challenges facing consumers today that want to buy what will be healthy for their family and what is grown more naturally? Like, you were talking about the pasture eggs. Is that difficult to find, or is it something you can find pretty easily in your local grocery store?
I think it has become easier. You know, you go to buy eggs now, or anything, toothpaste or anything, and there's a whole entire array. And I've bought the wrong product so many times because there's six packages that look similar, and you grab the one, and then you get home and you realize that it was whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're buying, there's going to be so many variations. So it really is important to read the labels. But really the most important thing, which my mom taught me, and I think is really good advice, is that you should be shopping the outside of the grocery store. You really shouldn't be going into those inside aisles, except for specifics like flour or sugar or olive oil, whatever. But along the outside is all your produce, your dairy, your meats, your fish. That's really where you should be doing your shopping. I mean, that kind of makes it easier.
It is good advice. I've heard that a few times, and I've noticed over the years how much less I go in the middle of the grocery store unless it's for a few select items.
That's good.
I'm learning more and more
coffee.
Every day. And coffee, yes. So your view of agriculture, where would you like to see that go? Or do you think we're going in the right direction?
No, I think it's not going in the right direction. It's so sad, especially up here in Maine. There are so many farms that are vacant or just falling into disrepair. Maybe the you know, couple is older, their family, their kids don't want to get into farming, and so there's these two older people living in a huge house. There's so many properties up here that are gorgeous, tons of land, outbuildings, an old farmhouse that might need a little work, but I mean, if you look at Instagram, everybody's all about renovating farmhouses. So I would think it would be a dream for a young couple to just kind of ditch their plans of working in a cubicle. And the property up here is really, really reasonable. So if you look at your costs of, say, living in an apartment in a city and two cars and commuting and everything versus buying some land and moving out to the country and trying to make a go of it, I wish that more of these old farms would, people would see the potential and they would give it a try. I mean, you can work from home because, I mean, if you're rural, there's not a lot of job opportunities, but there's so many opportunities to work from home now. There's so many companies are allowing telecommuting. There's all kinds of freelance opportunities. There's tons of ways to make money online, whether you're blogging or you're selling on eBay or selling on Amazon. So I think that if you just use a little bit of imagination and creativity, these young couples could make it work. And I think that having young families get back into farming would really put the whole country on the right path again. And it would relieve some of the congestion in the cities, and people would move back out where there's tons of land.
Why do you think maybe younger couples are steering clear of farming? What do you think maybe they're most worried about?
I guess it's hard. I mean, it's easier just to take a job that you're getting a paycheck every week. I guess it can be daunting, but really when you start looking up your costs, even the cost of just buying all your groceries at the grocery store, or, you know, once you have land and you're raising and growing, your expenses become pretty minimal and you're not having your commuting costs. There's a lot of cost involved with going to work, actually. You know, your wardrobe, depending on what you have to wear. And, you know, I mean, we only had one car growing up. My dad would take it to go to work. And if my mom needed to do errands, she would drive my dad into work and then take the car for the day. And I think people, they're just not willing to give up their vacations and their four TVs and their two cars and whatever, you know.
I agree. That's probably the right thought. And it's that security probably. They just know they're going to get that paycheck mm-hmm. every week. And taking that chance might be a little, like you said, daunting for them to feel. But it's definitely something to think about for maybe those young couples out there that are kind of on the fence, that there are ways to cut costs that you may not think about, like how much less you will be spending on absolutely your wardrobe.
Right. And lunches, even going out to lunch every day at work is expensive. You know, I almost feel like these weddings have become so crazy, $40,000 and $50,000 and $60,000 weddings. Like, do something simple instead and put a down payment on a farm property. Like, to me, and maybe it's just me, but that is much more appealing to me.
Well, that's it's something that's going to give back to you for a while as well.
Right.
Do you have any advice on what can be done to build a healthier food system? I know you did mention a couple times how you can maybe have your own garden or your own farm or raise chickens. That will obviously help. Anything else?
Well, I think that taking it out of the backyard also, and I know a lot of schools are starting to have chicken coops or gardens, and they're teaching the kids, you know, even little kids, and they're going out and they have this school garden or a community garden. I know there are some areas that are planting fruit trees down the main roads, like in cities, and that way, you know, homeless people or someone who just is in need of a meal, at least they can grab an apple or a pear off the tree. You know, planting edibles in a lot of the planters in downtown areas. I mean, I guess it's not the greatest produce because you got all the smog and stuff from the cars, but it's better than, you know, eating out of a dumpster. So I feel like making things more about edibles and putting gardens in places where there might just be empty lots and just getting more people out of the backyard even, but more involved in a gardening situation where it's available for them. I don't even know if I answered your question, actually.
No, you did.
What the question was.
But I love the idea of bringing it into the school system because that's also educating the youth, and you might spark the interest and have some future farmers in that because of their school experience.
And I've read that kids are more apt to eat vegetables too if they grow them themselves. So if, you know, regardless of what's happening at home, which obviously education has to start at home, but we all know that not all parents are going to be equipped or have time or whatever the deal is. So if you can, in schools, get the kids out planting things and growing things and eating vegetables, then, you know, that's just going to be a really good education base for them.
Oh, absolutely. You've brought up so many really good points for our listeners today, but if there was one takeaway that you would like to leave with, what would that be?
Honestly, raise chickens. Just because you live in a suburban area doesn't mean that you can't raise a few chickens, and it's really not hard. They don't take up a lot of space. And at the very least, plant a tomato or some basil in a pot on your patio.
Well, yeah, start small and you might realize how much fun it is or how it's not as much work as maybe you thought it might be. And you're seeing all these benefits from what you're growing.
Exactly.
That's a great takeaway. So how can our listeners find you after this podcast?
It's really easy. Fresh Eggs Daily. So fresheggsdaily.com. And I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Fresh Eggs Daily.
All right. Well, I want everyone to check out Lisa Steele at Fresh Eggs Daily. You'll learn a lot. Don't be afraid of the chickens. It sounds like they have many benefits and it's not that abnormal. It can be like a pet, right? The chickens can be your pets and
exactly.
You're raising them. It can be a really fun experience. Well, Lisa, I really appreciate you coming on today and giving us this wealth of information about eggs and raising chickens and ducks. So thanks for everything you left with our listeners today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Lisa.
Bye.
We'd like to remind our audience that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Biteable or of our staff personally. The purpose of the Biteable podcast is to encourage spirited dialogue around topics like food, nutrition, animal and human welfare, and the food system. Part of having an open and spirited dialogue is accepting that others have views that are different than ours and working to understand how their experiences have differed from our own. We encourage all listeners to do their own research on any and all topics discussed during the show. That being said, we hope you enjoyed the podcast and thanks for listening.